I'm Denny Boynton. Welcome to ArtCast. My guest today is Ward Bell, Vice President of Technology for IdeaBlade.
That is correct. It's good to see you, Denny.
Welcome to the Tech Ed Online Studios. I'm glad you're here.
I'm pleased to be here.
Tell us a little bit about your company and what you do there.
I would be thrilled to do that.
Please.
We are a company, a product company, that is focused on one of my favorite topics, which is, and which has been our abiding concern for years, which is how our customers can build rich internet applications with and by that I mean that there's execution on the client side. And typically that means that there's some network in between, like the internet.
Absolutely.
And we've been doing this for a lot longer than I care to remember. But with Silverlight now, that's our real focus, and our laser focus is on data services for Silverlight applications.
Okay, very good, very good. So you've done some work recently with Prism, and I know that you're delivering a talk here this week on that exact topic. So let's talk a little bit about, when you talk about modularity in these RIAs, and you're talking about being able to make changes to the applications and things like that, what approach do you guys start from? I mean, you said you've been doing this a long time, so you've seen a lot of changes. This week we're talking about Azure and the cloud and all these other types of things. So where do you kind of get started from an architectural perspective with this stuff to kind of kick things off?
Well, what we see is that people are, well, you know this to be true. The requirements at the beginning are never the requirements that you run into later.
Wait,
on
you get,
life.
You get requirements?
Yeah, well,
oh,
that's
wow.
The thing. Yeah, there's usually some kind of a sponsor. Anyway, something usually gets going, and everybody's very excited about it. But it gets to be a big ball of mud. And the pressure keeps coming to add more features, and they also want to divide it up among different teams so that you can have one part of the application grow while without tearing down all the rest of the application. And people look at this, and they either anticipate in the beginning that this is going to happen, but usually not. But they look at it, and they say, this is happening. How do we keep this application afloat? And there are a series of techniques that allow them to, very relatively simply, transform their application so that it isn't so brittle, so that the parts can evolve over time, and that they can begin to also reach different constituencies.
Okay.
Because in the beginning, you know, you're thinking of only one set of users, but then you say, well, we have administrators and non-administrators, and maybe we have some people out there that we want to reach customers, and it's sort of the same application, but maybe not, so maybe we need a Silverlight client versus a WPF client.
Well, you have, you have those regular, you know, people indecisions, or you have, you know, people suddenly remembering something. But you today, especially with the economy being the way it is, opportunities, time to market, shifts in business focus, anywhere you can kind of, you know, maximize that investment in the application to get a return, either saving money or making money. I mean, clearly that adds a whole new level of importance to this, so you can react quickly.
Absolutely, and reacting quickly is important, and also when you do encounter this problem, you have to figure out how you're going to make a modular application.
Right.
You don't want to keep reinventing all the plumbing. And fortunately, people have somebody to turn to. There's this great thing called Prism at Patterns and Practices,
okay,
which they can get into incrementally. It's not scary, but there are ways to introduce some of these Prism techniques, patterns that we might have all read about, but now you can actually see them at work, and they've got code to help you do it, so you can take that application that maybe was a ball of mud at one time and begin to factor it out so you start to be able to decouple it and build these things incrementally.
Cool. So since you mentioned Prism specifically, for those who may not be familiar with this, is it a guidance package? Is it a plug-in? Does it generate code? What exactly
right,
is Prism?
Right. Is it shoe polish? Is it, right.
Will it make your toast?
Will it make toast? Will it take out the dry cleaning? And yes, all of those. No.
Excellent. I love those guys in P&P.
They'll do anything. Actually, some of it's guidance. All right, by guidance, what I mean is that they are enunciating patterns that people may have heard about, and they just let everybody, but other people haven't heard about, so they let people know what the patterns are. They introduce some conventions so that you realize how you can think about those patterns concretely, not just off a book, but actually implement them in your own code.
Okay.
And they give examples of how to do that. And, on the other hand, they have glue code. Code that you can actually take and use. And one of the great things about having all of this together is that enough people looked at patterns and practices for this so that, let's suppose you built an application using Prism and you want to go out and hire somebody and you say, you know, sir, do you know Prism? And if I say yes, that means I can walk right in and I can look at your application and I know where everything
is. We instantly have a common nomenclature about
exactly.
the application.
Exactly. Yep. And so much time is wasted answering the question, the fundamental question, where does this code go? Where do I put the next thing? And when somebody says, this is a Prism app, then I have the roadmap. I know how you're thinking.
Absolutely.
I know where parts and pieces are going to be. And that's a huge time saver for everybody. And it's a huge way to get maintainability.
Mm-hmm.
Because your people can leave and new people can come in. And people will still do it in the same style with the same infrastructure.
You've got that common foundation that's building
that
the whole application.
Businesses really need that. That is that is one of the key business arguments for using something like Prism.
Well, and so many times, I mean, you know, in the Agile world, they have that concept of the truck factor. And so many organizations have a truck factor on applications or systems of one person. You know, and then all of the tribal knowledge is gone.
Absolutely.
And you're starting to go in. So this really gets you a good portion of the way down to getting, you know, increasing that truck factor significantly.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it really turns out to be true. I have walked into many apps. I knew nothing, sight unseen. They say, well, we're using Prism. Or they use the antecedent, which was CAB, much harder to use.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things, though, friends. If you've never heard about CAB and you had the horror stories there, Prism is so much easier. So much easier to get into, so much easier to understand.
What are some of the differences there? Since you did mention CAB, I mean, what are some of the major differences there between the two?
Well, when you were interested in CAB, you couldn't just get a little. You were in for the whole boat.
Okay. Yeah.
All right? So you went from knowing nothing to climbing this huge curve, and then in you went. And also, and I love CAB, man, because I used it for a long time, so I don't mean to knock it. It was a great step one. But there were also deep inheritance structures. So if you were trying to find out what was happening, it was a game of Dungeons and Dragons, you know?
It's a great way to put it, yep.
Oh, absolutely. Yep. But Prism, you know, they said, we're not going to do that anymore. So you don't see deep hierarchies at all. And it's, dependency injection continues to run through it, but you can use it in a very simple way, mm-hmm. not a whole lot of extra markup. And you just sort of say, you know, I think I'm ready to learn about how one module should talk to another. I think I'm ready to try this event aggregator stuff. And then you find that it is there. So, but if you don't want to know that that's there, if you're not ready to deal with that, you don't have to.
Okay.
The other thing is that they really tuned it for, it's good for all kinds of things, but they really tuned it for WPF and Silverlight. So if you're moving into that modality, it's set up to favor the kinds of things that you want to do in those environments.
Okay, great. So considering we're just doing a short show here, I was thinking really for the architect audience out there that's going to watch this episode, could you talk about maybe three things that architects who really want to build modular applications for the web and all the benefits that we've been talking about, can you maybe talk about three things that they should keep top of mind as they approach the designing of the architecture for these kinds of applications?
Okay. Well, the first principle is decoupling.
Okay.
Decoupling. Try and get all these pieces that one time knew all about each other that make your code so brittle because you're holding on like this, and if I do anything, I pull everything with it. So thinking about decoupling, one of the best strategies for doing decoupling is this thing called dependency injection. That scares a lot of people. I hope when people come to my session, they realize you can get into dependency injection light. You can wade around in the shallow end of the pool and get a lot done.
Okay.
So they'll need to know about that. And I actually think those are some key things. Just inch your way through event some of these other things that we'll be talking about, event aggregator and commands and regions, which are ways to put views, compose your app so that views arrive in real estate that you have marked out on the screen, and they're just reserved spaces, and you'll learn about how things can fly into there, which you'll want to do.
Okay, all right. So you mentioned Silverlight earlier. So you're doing some Silverlight work right now, I assume. Are you working in 2 to 3? What types of things are you seeing that are leading to allowing you to better build these kinds of applications?
When you say 2 to 3, you mean am I?
I'm moving from version 2 of Silverlight to version 3 of Silverlight.
We're totally committed to Silverlight 3.
Okay.
Because it's with Silverlight 3 that the controls you want are there, that the programming model is finally rich enough for you to be able to do the business kinds of things that you want to do. I'm I really believe that with Silverlight 3, we can now take the wraps off and people can build business applications, line of business applications, right now with Silverlight 3, and they're ready to go.
Wow. Okay.
This is it. This is the turn. We've turned the corner with Silverlight 3.
Okay. Well, that's and I agree. People tend to call me biased about things like that. I'm not sure why they would think I would be, but I totally agree with you. I thought looking at the programming model for that, for taking it to the next generation of these kinds of applications, where we're getting out of kind of the media.
Yes.
Media-centric type of online applications, but getting into doing some serious business with Silverlight Online. That we're there with 3.
We are there with 3, and we're going to build those differentiated UIs that give a not only is it richly interactive for the end user, but now it's actually exciting for the end user. And so I think we're going to see more consumer-facing applications that are business applications that have all of that kind of businessy characteristic and data-backed stuff that we need, and they integrate it with the excitement.
Okay.
I think we're going to see a lot more exciting UIs, and they're not just going to be exciting, but they're going to be more productive. People are going to be able to sell more. People are going to be able to make more money with these kinds of applications.
Wow. Okay. Well, I hope you're right.
I'm convinced.
Let's just take a quick sojourn now into user experience. Since we are talking about Rhea, and that's really the value prop behind Rhea is a better user experience. From your experience, you know, from your work in building out some of these, is there a benefit there for end users as to how you're proposing to better, you know, to build these applications? Is there something that directly impacts the end user in this?
Oh, absolutely, and it's not just spinning dials and all of that other stuff. I'll tell you, and you've probably seen this, in many of the kinds of business applications, especially those that for casual users, the way we typically have built those is everything has a sort of the same degree of prominence. Mm-hmm. And so your eye is trying to figure out what's important. There's no way to talk about what's really vital in the screen that you're presenting to somebody. And the fact that I can't, as a user, find out what I'm supposed to do and what's the most important thing to look at means that I spend time wandering around the screen.
It's not intuitive, yeah.
And now we're going to be able to say, this is important. No, that's not so important when you want to do that. Or when you're ready to find out about that, you'll be able to unfold it in a very natural way and put it away when you don't want to look at it. And so that ability to emphasize and that ability to unveil things when you want to see them will actually mean that end users are more productive. It's not just spinnies. Those little things make a huge difference in how fast I can make decisions as an end user. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're after, right?
Right.
Faster, better decisions by end users.
Yep, absolutely. Well, and again, it's... I love your point because so many of the demonstrations that you see of this technology involve the spinnies,
yeah.
or the three-dimensional spinning cube, as I like to think of it. It's like look what we can do.
Yeah.
And you're right, because user experience is really about access to information in a way that's intuitive for you to get to. So
that's
I agree with you completely.
What's important to me right now? What decision do I have to make? What's the best decision for me to make? That's where we're going in user interface. And now we can, because with WPF and Silverlight, it's very easy to shape that experience in that way. And that's no fooling around.
All right. Excellent. So from the standpoint of solution architects out there who want to learn more about this, you know, do you have any go-dos or do you have anything they say you should do this? And where can they get more information about this style, this method of development that you're talking about?
Well, I think one of the guys who's really leading the way in showing what these experiences can be like, is a guy named Billy Hollis, who may have been on one of these Arcast shows.
Probably.
And you got to go see some of the things he's doing. Marcus Egger is starting to show some of the kinds of things that you can do in Silverlight that strengthen the experience. I saw some of that here at TechAd. Mm-hmm. I think we'll see more and more models of how you can break away from the standard forms and grids. I think you should go to the Prism site and get Prism and try out some of the very easy lessons and how to do the individual things that make up Prism. Mm-hmm. And you're also at some point going to have to figure out how you're going to get data into your client application.
Sure.
And I really would invite you to come to our site, www.ideablade.com, to see what we do to make it easy for you to build a rich model to support this rich user experience.
That's outstanding. I think the more resources we get out there, and not just from Microsoft,
no.
but from people out there who are building real applications in the real world, I think that's important for everybody.
Absolutely. There's a lot going on.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to let you get back to it. Ward, thanks so much for meeting with me today.
It was great. Thank you.
It's a great conversation. I enjoyed it a lot. So thank you very much for watching our cast. I'm your host, Denny Boyd. Until next time, thanks and see you.